When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast. One of the things that was said in the opening, not the opening, I'm going to tell you right now, is medicate your seven-month-old dog. If your dog reacts, walk away. If you're tired of walking away from situations, walk as late as you can at night before bed. It's the only time you should be walking your dog. And nothing else is going to work for your dog. These are things that dog owners hear all the time. And if you're listening to this podcast, I know for a fact you've heard somebody say this, and it's not the case. It doesn't have to be. This is a seven-month-old German Shepherd, beautiful dog. Saw him on camera and is struggling with reactivity. And their trainer literally has told them to do all the things, and it's not working. And in fact, at the end of the conversation, which you'll hear, she says, it's getting worse. It's getting worse, right? So in my opinion, in my experience, It's a terrible way for a dog to live. It's a terrible way for dog owners to live because they think that their dog is, there's something wrong with them, which is in fact why I created the No Bad Dog brand in itself and this podcast, and why I started training dogs in general. So I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. And more importantly, I hope that it helps you because it's sickening and sad to hear that there's professionals out there telling dog owners to never hold the dog accountable, never tell them no, and if your dog has a problem, you walk away, you walk late at night, and if that doesn't work, we're going to put them into a puddle, even if they're 7 months old, because we don't have enough education in our systems to help you with your dog, which it will take me or another skilled trainer and experienced trainer out there 20 minutes, and this dog will be walking in a dog park. You can probably hear the frustration in my voice, and I'm not trying to... This isn't about sides here, guys. This is about education, okay? So enjoy this podcast, and we'll see you. We'll talk to you next time. All right, what's going on?
Yeah, so we have a seven-month-old German Shepherd that we got when she was a puppy. So she was 8 weeks old when we got her. And so we started doing the socialization aspect of it very early. So there's a facility that's near us that you can go through and kind of do training classes and socialization, and it's kind of based on age. So we did that, and we've kind of continued that on. But she's starting around the age of 12 weeks, she started to become more reactive to things. So kind of almost like a stranger danger thing, but like at a really early age. So she would get kind of barky and lungy at dogs, at people, at random inanimate objects. I mean, it was just kind of bizarre as to what was going on. So we went through and talked with the trainer about it. And she said, hey, you know, based off of what I'm seeing, you might want to, talk to a behavioralist. So we spoke with a behavioralist, and she's well known in this area as someone that's good at her job. So it's just not someone claiming to be a behavioralist. She actually trains a lot of the vets in this area about behavioral issues. So we felt like we got a good match from a resource perspective. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of her guidance was, you know, go through, distract, here's some different games to play, to try to get her to basically have that bubble that, you know, doesn't get popped from her going from being non-reactive to being reactive.
Okay.
So we've been doing that for a while, and we've seen a little bit of progress, but it's really not, it's not a huge increase.
So are you, when you say that you've been working with her, are you still working with the behaviorist? Is that what you're saying?
We've stopped at this point because we just didn't really see a lot of benefit from it. Her
Okay.
next step was to tell us to go see a vet behavioralist who would basically prescribe medication, which I'm thinking a 7-month-old on medication just doesn't seem right. So, you know, it's not like she does this all the time either. So, like, we went to my parents' house last night, had dinner with them, and she barked a couple of times, and then she was completely fine. She would go up to my mom, give her kisses. She went up to my dad and was wanting pets from him.
Cool.
So, I mean, it's not all the time. It's like when she gets excited, it's hard to get her to calm down sometimes. Especially when she sees another dog and she's on a leash. When she's off leash and in a play group, she's perfect. I mean, she's around other people. Other people are petting her. There's nothing going on that looks, you know, odd. As soon as the leash goes on and she has that restraint is when she's getting that, you know, I'm worked up, I want to be free kind of thing.
Okay. So it's classical leash reactivity. Right? Okay.
Yeah.
So your goals right now are to minimize the leash reactivity, and it sounds like she's good with people, she's good with dogs, but when you put the leash on her is when she becomes intense, stimulated, and reactive.
Yeah.
Okay. And okay, so let me just back up a little bit just to give you context, because I don't know if you know the process, but there is a kind of a funnel system that happens with dogs, especially when you get into and it's everyone has a funnel system, but there's people who work hand in hand together, and they're basically referring, hey, if this doesn't work, go here, and if this doesn't work, go here, and a lot of times it ends up with medication. And I would agree with you on that. There's probably two things you haven't done that should always be checked before you even consider medicating your dog, especially at such a young age. But the problem is some behaviorists, some trainers, and some humans don't know what to do. They don't have the experience in order to help the things that you're dealing with. So my kind of philosophy around this is pretty straightforward and simple, and I think, in my opinion, logical and reasonable and fair. And I think that you have to have baseline skill sets in order to have realistic lifestyle management things, right? So meaning if your kid doesn't know the ABCs and how to say please and thank you, there's a good chance when they go to a public place at the age of 5, they're not going to know how to communicate. They're not going to know what's going on. They're not going to be able to understand things. It's going to be like a little feral human, right? So oftentimes, with dogs, we get into a bit of a situation where you guys have done, it sounds like you have done the right things in, as far as foundation. You've probably got some decent obedience. You've probably been working on it from the proper age. Sit down, stay, heel, etc. I don't think you would have gone through the training as long as you have if that wasn't there. But one thing that a lot of dog owners struggle with, and you can answer this question to kind of validate this because I've seen this 100 times, is when you are going through the process and training dogs, they have to have the foundation and the skill sets, right? So let's say you go to your parents' house and she gets excited because she's in a new place. She's excited because you're excited. She's feeling that energy. She's feeling the warm welcome greeting from your mom, and all that's exciting, right? And so it's natural for dogs to get stimulated. It's not unrealistic for these things to happen, right? But your job, again, like you bring a kid to anywhere they get excited, grocery store, Disneyland, we're not trying to tell them to not be excited and stimulated, but our objective as parents, either dogs or people, is to keep them safe and to keep the situation reasonably calm, right? So you would go into the house, she'd go, oh, and she'd start whining. She's a vocal dog by nature because she's a shepherd. So there's that. But she gets stimulated, she gets excited, she might get worked up. And here's probably what you're missing. Two things is when you tell her to down, tell her to sit, tell her to place, tell her to leave it, right? These are just baseline communication skills that every dog should have. Two things is A, the dog isn't practiced under these circumstances. So you have been practicing with no defense your whole life. You go into the game, somebody gives you pressure and you flop, right? So a lot of training not all training is equal, like anything else in life. But as you're going through the training process, some dog training facilities, camps, groups, whatever you want to call them, people, companies, they don't put you through reality training. So you'll go through the process in which your dog understands the basic obedience, but not a lot of distraction, especially realistic distraction. And then the second biggest reason why you're failing is because on top of that, let's say the dog does know the behaviors and they're like, oh, I've practiced this before, but not in this context, is the accountability doesn't exist. Those are the two main reasons why dog owners will fail, is they haven't properly desensitized their dog to those realistic situations. So they're in a training room, not much going on. Everything's looking great. We're using lots of food. The dog is developing. Okay, great. The moment you throw a minor distraction, even in that sterile clinical environment, the dog loses track. And that's normal. And that's okay. But if you don't work through how to handle that situation, that's why you're ending up not successful. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Am I flipped the wrong way?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know what happened. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I can kind of, over time, I saw your head start to turn.
Yeah, we're kind of like rotating to the side here. Hey.
So those are the two main reasons. And there's granule, obviously, context there with every individual and dog that I meet. But those are the two main reasons is you're not prepared for the task. So you just haven't, it's not anybody's fault necessarily. It's just the training in a sterile environment is not the same thing as going out into the real world. That's why you're seeing this kind of meltdown and you're like, what's going on? This doesn't make it. It's going to practice every day, shooting on an empty net. And then the moment you get a goal, a goaltender in there, you don't know what to do because you have never had any pressure, real life pressure. And then again, the outside of that is number two, the second biggest reason is the accountability. The dog knows sit, the dog knows leave it, the dog's no down, whatever. But the dog pushes through it, flips you off and says, nope, I'm going to do it anyway. and your ability to hold the dog accountable doesn't exist. Therefore, the dog is going to not listen. And typically and historically, and even in my training protocols, I practice 99% positive reinforcement, a lot of positive reinforcement, because that's the way that most dogs learn. It's the way we learn, right? We get rewarded for the behavior. We want to do it again. Makes sense. But there's that 1% of time where if the dog knows the behavior well, like a kid, they grab a knife, you say no, and they think it's funny and they run around. There has to be serious repercussions for that unless it's extremely dangerous or worse, right? So my point is with the dog, it's very similar in a sense of if you don't have reasonable accountability for your dog, whatever that means, we can talk about it in a moment, that's the other reason why dogs blow you off. And if you're developing dogs with positive reinforcement, which is what I do, and you don't add in the other balance to that, kind of the yin to the yang, then the dog will opt into reacting. So if you say, hey, here's a piece of food, sit, the dog sits, the dog's motivation under those circumstances in that clinical environment is going to look like the dog is trained and they know what they're doing, right? But, and you feel good because you're the client and you paid the trainer and everything looks good. But on the contrary of that, once you get out to real world, you have now predicated your training off of motivation. And unbeknownst to you and your dog, and maybe even your trainer, if you predicate your training off of motivation, once your mom or another dog comes into the mix, your dog is actually not necessarily disobeying because they are going after the motivation that they find fit. And then you lose. So that's, again, really quickly. Typically, I would say 9 times out of 10, somebody comes to me with a situation that you've seen or that you're dealing with. That's what I've seen. So you can kind of fill in the gaps there and tell me how you feel about that.
I think you're absolutely right. You know, we've done the training in an environment where she's comfortable with, you know, she sees people and dogs, the same people, same dogs, mostly all the time during the training. And we've done the training in the house, the sit, stay, heal, mm-hmm. place, mm-hmm. all of those basic commands. And she does them like a champion in the house. As soon as we're in the outside world, even in the backyard, where there are distractions and stuff, just game over. Nothing really matters unless I put her on a leash and I'm, you know, working her outside. Then she'll listen. She'll sit and down. She doesn't come when I call her. But you know, as soon as she's outside, say we go to like outside in the parking lot of Home Depot or Lowe's or something where there's a lot of excitement, people and stuff.
Poof.
It's game over. Yep. It's 100% game over. We had actually a guy came over to us and said, your dog is aggressive. And we're like, she's not aggressive. And he's like, I can see it in her eyes that she's going to bite somebody.
Yeah. I love that.
And
that
was really annoying. And So, you know, we're just trying to get her. Take her to different places where she's under a little bit more stress, but keep it, you know, try to keep her under the threshold. But after we work her a little bit in the parking lot, she does calm down unless she sees somebody, you know, shuffling around towards her or eyeballing or something, and then it's game over again. So, you know, that's pretty much what our experience has been. You know, once she's out of a bubble, so to speak, she doesn't listen to anything. She doesn't sit or nothing. It's yep. like we're speaking some other language, you know, so.
I do. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And that's part two. And listen, like a lot of people deal with that a lot. Like I would say most people, and that's why their training fails. And it's really frustrating because you don't realize that you've gone through, I've gone training for 4 months or whatever, which is a very, very long time to train, right? And but because you haven't really, I like incrementally pushing a dog forward to reality, just like you would with humans, right? Like when you're first riding a bike, you have training wheels and then it comes off and then then it just gets better, right? The more experienced you get. And I think it's very frustrating for dog owners because they don't know what to point the finger at when these things happen. You go to Home Depot and she loses it and you're like, and people are looking at you like, hey, train your dog. And you're like, we do train all the time. But the reality is you're just doing the wrong training and you're not doing enough of the right training. That's all. Which is good for you because I would agree, you have a healthy, nice, young German Shepherd that can do the things you want to do, and you're just not doing the right training, which is the best news ever, because it's like bringing your car to the mechanic and they're like, hey, the reason why your check engine light's on is because you haven't put any oil in your car. It's an easy fix, right? It's like, oh, okay, right. This 1 + 1 = 2 here. So second to that, what when you guys are doing your training, I talk about this a lot, like your relationship is so important, and part of your relationship is that accountability, is that boundary, is that respect, is that discipline, is that I think accountability is just the best word for it. So right now, let's say what's her name?
Zuri. Z-H-U-R-I.
Z-H-U-R-I, Zuri.
Uh-huh.
Cool.
Yep.
So let's say Zuri sit. A dog walks by, she gets up. What's your game plan? How do you handle that?
We just turn around and try to distract her, go the other direction.
Okay.
Because at that point, she's not sitting. She's just lunging and going yep. for the dog.
That's all I need to hear. So in my experience, and that's what we're talking about here. It's why you hired me. It's why you're on the phone with me. You've seen something out there that goes, hey, this guy might make sense to me. So, yeah, you know, dog training is like anything else, guys. It's literally, you could do it a bazillion, you could do it a bazillion different ways, but there's certain things that work over time and there's things that don't, right? And so I have just found, like, for an example, again, like your behaviorist, even your behaviorist with a PhD might tell you when your dog reacts at 7 months old, 6 months old, instead of correcting them for the reactivity to clearly tell them what they're doing is wrong so they can overcome their fear or their anxiousness or whatever, they might say, walk away and try it again. And if that doesn't work, then we'll medicate. And if that doesn't work, then we'll do both. We're going to walk away from our problems instead of assertively handling them, and we're going to medicate your dog to a puddle. Which to me, in my experience, because I have such a vast experience in specific behavioral modification cases all over the world. So I have a, my point is I have a very good gene pool of mixes of breeds and dogs and people from everywhere, right? So my experience has been, especially with a dog like you, so we have to, some clear indicators here are really important to talk about. So your dog doesn't have a really bad genetic disposition of being aggressive, nor should they be, because they haven't been neglected, abandoned, or abused and poked and sticked and prod and stabbed and et cetera, which some dogs, so I'm like, oh, okay, this makes sense, right? You're dealing with a young, boisterous dog who gets overly stimulated when they get, when they're on the leash. And it makes sense. So just to give you context on leash reactivity is very, very, very common. And it looks like a lot of different, it looks the same, but internally it's a lot of different things. And in your case, your dog goes, hey, there's a dog, what do I do? And they're jumping and they're barking and they're, and it looks, and especially with the bigger German Shepherd, it looks like, holy crap, this dog's going to kill me. When the reality is, as you guys know, when you let the dog go, she's going to come over, her hackles are going to come up, she's going to sniff you and things are going to be fine, right? But in my experience, in my successful experience, it's been really easy to correct that behavior right when it happens. So once you have your dog on a leash, let's say, Zuri sit, she puts her butt on the ground. You say, yes, good sit. Bang. Maybe you even give her a piece of food. Positive reinforcement. Awesome. And then the moment she goes, oh, there's a bird, what are we? And she gets out of her sit, you're correcting her for the for not sitting, right? So you're using a leash correction to correct her, right? So here's the breakdown is she's getting punished, corrected for getting out of her sit, which two things happen there. I think the bigger picture here, the macro, is the simple fact that you held your dog accountable for something you asked her to do and she knows well, and she's going to look at you differently. And I've seen that. I have it documented thousands of times where all of a sudden the dog starts going, oh, you're serious about this. I have to sit, right? So there, so just like with us guys, there's accountability for our actions or lack thereof, right? If we were
this
to,
is the,
yeah, I can hear
this is a crazy person.
I can hear her. She's beautiful. She's a beauty. She's a beauty. She's a bubu. So there's that piece. But for me, what I have experienced with dogs is they start to take a deep breath and they go, oh, okay. Because you got to think, she's living in a world where she sees something and goes, you guys don't exist. She just goes like that. So in her head, there's absolutely zero walls to get to what she wants. So she see. So when something comes up in her head because of the way you've trained her from a puppy, she goes and gets it. I like the ball. I like the food. I like the person. I like the dog. She goes. She's not used to impulse control with accountability, which means if she makes a mistake, the worst case scenario is you're just going to walk away and ask her to do it again. So it actually will frustrate her even more because she doesn't understand what's going on. And that's just as a dog professional. I mean, think about it. Your dog sees another dog or a person. She gets stimulated. She whines. She cries. She jumps in her back leg. She spins. And she's like, I need to go see this thing. You guys pull her away and bring her back. That makes things tremendously worse because you're compounding and actually accelerating the frustration by pulling her back. It's like the drunk guy at the bar. You're slapping her in the face and pushing her away and pushing her away and pushing her away, right? It's making her more intense. And that's why it looks the way that it does. And so what I have done thousands of times it's been really helpful is I correct the dog with a leave it. I teach the dog the leave it preemptively to this scenario, though, like you would with anything else. I'm not going to teach the dog how to recall when they're off leash chasing deer. That's not going to work out. I'm going to teach the dog recall in our backyard with a long line and some food, and then I'm going to work my way up, right? So for an example, we work on leave it with basic things in the house. So we have food, we have balls, anything that she likes, and we'll throw it on the ground and we'll say, leave it. And she goes, she flips you off and says, A, I don't listen to you, and B, I'm hungry. So you correct her with the leash. We'll talk about that in a minute, like what to use, what's going to be best for you in the introduction stages. But you correct her and say, hey, leave it. So there's accountability, like, hey, what did, am I chopped liver? Same thing with sit, like in the context of this, where you say, Zuri, sit. And she's like, yeah, but there's a ball and there's food and there's a dog. Like once you let her blow through you, your relationship starts, in my opinion, like the first time it happens, it's like all over in my experience. Like same thing with my big, powerful, stubborn mastiff I have upstairs. When he, like he does certain things to certain people because he knows he can, and it's very interesting to watch. He'll never do that to me or my wife. He'll only do it to people he doesn't know because he's testing. He's like, can I do this with you? And if they allow it. So it's kind of the same thing with Zuri. When you tell her to sit or anything, come or whatever, and she blows through it, she already has your number, right? She's already like, hey, when you tell me to do something, if it's good for me and I want to do it, then I will do it. But if it's not, then I'm going to push through, which is what you're dealing with. So the moment you start holding her accountable for her actions is the moment that you start to begin your healthy relationship with your dog that I've seen. Because think about it. Zuri, sit. No, there's a squirrel. Zuri. So again, and what you're doing right now is you're either asking her again or you're going the other way and trying again, which is not teaching. You're not teaching her, right? It's the same equation. 1 + 1 = 4. Try it again. 1 + 1 = 4. Try it again. You know, you're like, okay, here's one and here's one, right? Let's count. 1, 2. Okay, so let's do this again. 1 + 1, right? So you have to teach her how to handle these situations through effective communication, right? And so that's what you guys are dealing with is you're saying, try it again, try it again. But how many times do you have to try it again until you realize, okay, it's been 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. This shit's not working for us, right? Which, you know, understandably why you're here, but I'm just saying, I just want you to know, because here's the thing is when you guys call, you might think, I don't understand why these things aren't working. And I want you to know these are the reasons why they're not working. So,
yeah.
So this is where I would start, is I would start with the very basic foundations of your impulse control and your basic obedience at home. So for an example, you put your we'll talk about what equipment you're using, but you put your leash and your collar on, and you'll first thing, just the easy thing to do is just put her into a sit. Zuri, sit. So in my experience, dogs who don't have accountability will A, need a couple sits to sit, and B, when they put their butt on the ground, if they don't get immediately paid, they bounce up, which is a problem. Because what's the point of teaching a dog sit if the only tangible reason why they sit is to get paid and then they're right back up? Because the sit is actually a behavior that we're going to use with utility in our lives, right? It's like we're not just teaching our kids how to do the ABCs because it's a fun song. They're actually going to need it in their future to learn how to put sentences together and spell and read and write. So with dogs, when we tell them to sit and down and place and heal, it's for utility purposes to say, hey, when I'm out with my dog and I want to get a coffee, I want to A, not get dragged to the coffee shop, so heal, and B, when I get there, I just want to tell my dog to sit and stay so I can order, get the coffee, and walk away. Right. So, So my point is a lot of times when we, and again, this is just my experience, when we tend to get into situations where a dog is actively only doing behaviors for motivation, it's not really their fault that they are acting like this, because we put a dog into a sit, they go into a sit, and we pay them and they get right back up. And sometimes if you get a trainer that really isn't looking at a realistic outcome for you, for the owners, the clients, you guys, the dog is like, oh, this is what sit is. I put my butt in the ground, I get paid, I get right back up, and they're wagging their tail. For me, if I tell a dog to sit and they put their butt in the ground, I give them the treat and payment, but they can't get up until I tell them to break or go into a heel or something else. So what you guys would do in your home is you would go, Zuri, sit. And if she doesn't, you'd give her a leash, you give her correction. You're like, hey, I asked you to sit. You know it. You're 7 months. We've been working on this for a long time. Because she might be like, yeah, but I'm excited because
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save. Like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Door, and I'm like, I want to go, you know. So you just hold her accountable, right? You say sit. She doesn't. You correct her. Because a correction is to clarify. That's all it is. It's a word that a lot of people will use depending on what you believe in, really. Great, and like, hey, this is what this is. Like, I corrections to me are literal lifesavers. And then to other people, if they don't believe in punishment or telling their dog no, they may look at it as a derogatory word of your dog will hate you if you correct them. And to me, a correction is to clarify what you want. And this is the lack thereof of what you guys have been doing. So I don't have to tell you why it's important because you already know why it's important because you haven't done it yet. So I think it's important when you tell her, so again, homework, sit. She doesn't, hold her accountable. Hold that sit for 10 seconds and then say, okay, Zuri, break, and then give her a break. So on your terms, and I don't know if you have a release command. If you do, you can see your release command. But I typically will say, put your butt on the ground. Thank you very much. Okay, now you can break. And so two things happen here. Is again, obviously it has purposeful utility in your life where if you want your dog to sit for whatever reason, and you can enter any behavior, down, place. It's the same framework that I'm talking about here. You can enter in. I'm just using sit as an example. And once you tell your dog to sit and then you break them, not only, again, does it have utility in a sit or a down or stay or heel, but you also are communicating with your dog clearly in a healthy, clear way that when you ask your dog to do it, they have to do it. And if they don't, there's accountability. Okay? Like with kids, go to school, do your homework, brush your teeth. Right? Your job as dog owners and as parents to this dog is to make sure that you are withholding and upholding things that are very serious to you. And so that way you can, like, listen, you guys have a beautiful 7-month-old German Shepherd. There's absolutely no reason why you can't go to Home Depot, do your shopping, and leave without a meltdown. Like, does that make sense?
Yeah, yep, we got everything. So we agree. I mean, that's our goal is to be able to take her really anywhere that we want to go, and there's not this meltdown that happens where like, oh crap, not this again.
Yeah. So. And you know, the thing is that the tools we have been given for the training are using it 100%, but they're just failing us and failing her as well. So I don't think they're the right training for us.
Because it's positive only. There's no correction portion to it, which is what we're seeing as what's lacking.
Yeah. Well, it's
yeah, there's no accountability.
Right. And it's a lot of things, but it's more importantly just sad for me because I'm like, you've wasted so much time, so much money, where this could take somebody that has balance like 20 minutes and you'd be like, holy crap, look at this dog, right? Because it's so clear, right? Like your dog right now goes, I'm going to lose my freaking mind when I see something. And then you guys are like, well, we got to leave now.
Yep.
It's like parenting, right? Yeah. You come in and your kid's like, I want a lollipop. You're like, it's 7 a.m. How about a donut? And they throw a tantrum and you're like, okay, I'm going to leave. And every single time that this happens and your kid throws a tantrum, you just leave. You just leave. You just leave. So that it's called negative punishment. You're removing your dog from an environment to punish them. But if it works, do it because it's super easy, right? But most times it doesn't work. Right. So,
yeah.
All right. So here's, okay. So you guys, you understand this makes sense. I don't have to sell you anything and I'm not trying to, but I always like to tell people because they go to these trainers, right? Good reviews and a nice website and a PhD. And they're like, I don't understand. We're doing everything that's working. And I'm like, you're only doing half of the stuff because you're not holding your dog accountable and you're not giving your dog structure. You're not giving your dog leadership. You're not giving your dog boundaries. You're literally asking your dog to do something. And if it's up to them and it's good for them, they do it. And if it's not and they freak out, you leave. And that's a terrible way to live for your dog. And it's a very unrealistic way for you guys to live. And it doesn't have to be like that. And that's the good news, is you've just done it, you know, 80%. You got some work to do. So here's where I would start. I'm just going to give you a couple options where that I would suggest. And what I can do is I can send you links of the equipment I'm talking about so you don't get the wrong stuff. So I'll just follow up with an email later today and just send you everything. I'll give you links to videos that I would recommend, potentially courses, and of course the equipment that I'm referring to, so you don't have to, you know, shuffle around and try to do that. So the principles make sense. So now we just have to apply these things. Okay, so for Zuri, right now you're probably using a harness or a flat collar. I would recommend switching because she's going to be a larger dog. I saw her big head. I would recommend something. I would recommend something called a Starmark dog training collar, which I'll send you the link. And it's essentially it's a collar that has action. So you guys are missing action. So right now, if your dog pulls in a harness, they're just putting all of their weight in the strongest place in their core of their body, and they're pulling through, and you pull them back, and you pull them back. You're not communicating. You're just hanging on, which is like the harnesses were invented for dogs to pull on people safer, period. So that's why it's not working for you to say, hey, I want to communicate with this animal, not hold on. So I'm going to send you the Starmark training collar. It has action. So when you pull on it, it comes in, it comes out, it comes in, it comes out. So the dog's ability to shut the pressure off and your ability as a handler to turn the pressure on is there, right? So let's say you say it's sit and Zuri's like, I'm not sitting for you. Where's my food? Or whatever. You can apply pressure up and it has action. It's not stagnant. Like a flat collar, just your basic collar is invented for holding tags. And like I have a flat collar on my dogs all the time. But it's not my training collar. So when you say sit, that action is going to come up. And I'm going to send you a link on how to fit it and everything, because that's something that you might just want to see outside of this conversation. But that's where you guys are going to start, is you're going to start holding her accountable. And I can promise you, I don't promise much, but I can promise you, you guys are going to see significant changes immediately for starting to do this, because for the very first time, you're holding your dog accountable. And in most cases, you see a sigh of relief from dogs. They go, oh, thank God you grabbed this ship, because I was running around like a, you know, with my head cut off, not knowing what to do. And you see that pretty quickly, and you'll see a calm, like, okay. Because German Shepherds in particular are very loyal, smart, intelligent, thinking dogs, and they have a lot in their head, and they're constantly wanting to do something. And the moment you go, hey, you're working for me now, they go, thank God, because I, you know, I'm 7 months old and I really don't know how to drive yet, but you're allowing me to. So I also see that very, very often, as the dog will start to calm down, which is nice. So you're going to start applying these things to everything that you do. The small picture again is to have tighter obedience, but the bigger picture is she knows that when you tell her to do something, there's actual accountability if she doesn't listen, which is important. Right now, you have no weight behind your voice. There's no enforcement, right? So you see a cop, they never pull anybody over. Well, I'm robbing the bank every day. I'm speeding every day, right? There's no enforcement. And so we're going to start doing that with her, and you're going to start to see a pretty big change. But you're going to be doing this with thresholds, which is really important. So going to like door frames, putting her on leash inside, and just going up to a door and saying stay. You can put her into a sit, but you don't have to. I just tell her to stay. She'll get it pretty quick. You walk forward, she's going to go walk with you. She's going to say, I'm coming too. And you correct her with the leash. Ah, boom. Ah, boom. And you just move and you start testing her. You move forward, she stays, good stay. And then you go back to what she knows, which is positive reinforcement. Positive reinforcement's definition is to shape, mold, teach, and develop. It has nothing to do with stopping behaviors. It's only to create behaviors. So in my experience, which is 13 years of behavior cases, that's it, trying to use positive reinforcement to stop behaviors is impossible by definition and by not only by theory, but also in application. It doesn't work. You can't reward a dog to stop something that you don't want them to do. It makes no sense. So you go back to that once the dog does what you want and you have a nice balance, healthy balance. So same thing with other things like food, balls, toys. So you do your thresholds at your doors and you just walk around, practice this, walk around your house. This is number one that I told you earlier, is you're not being realistic. So you start practicing this around your house. You go to your front door, you go to your side door, your slider door. If she's crate trained, same thing. You'll just say wait or stay or whatever you guys want to use, whatever you're already using. But the only thing that you're missing right now is the accountability, right? And the enforcement behind your voice. So when you say sit and she's like, nope, enforced. I'm enforcing that rule. And things will change dramatically for you guys very quickly. Like within a day, you'll see significant changes, and I'm excited for that. What questions do you have on that?
Well, we have some collars and things. We take her for a walk at night when there's nobody out there because we were told to avoid a lot of, you know, things that cause her to go crazy. So we go at night, but she has not walked loose leash. So we have a prong collar that we started using. But the fact of the matter is we have no idea how to really use a prong collar and when to correct. And she still pulls it. I mean, we give her a correction. She's still like, fuck this. I don't care. Yeah. You know, she's still pulling, you know? So
yeah,
I don't know how, we don't know how to use these things.
I'm going to break it down really quick, but again, I'm going to send you a 15-minute video that's going to be more helpful. So the prong collar is fine. You can start with that. There's a ladder to this. Typically, prong collar is fine, safe. So as you said, the prong collar, like a lot of people, especially people who've never used collars like this, just assume when the dog pulls against it that they don't like it, and couldn't be farther from the truth, as you know. The prong collar is when your dog pulls, you snap the collar and correct them. And the prongs evenly distribute the pressure. So you have a flat collar, and if you correct, it's basically one blunt wham. So what the prong collar does is it evenly distributes pressure. A lot of people think, again, especially people who don't believe in telling their dogs no, which is, in my opinion, more inhumane than anything else, think that they're sharp, and when the dog pulls, it hurts them, which I don't think I don't think they would be legal in the United States, and B, I don't think anybody would actually be professional trainers if that were the case, right? Actually, what the prong collar does is when you apply pressure really fast and you pop the collar, is it's a safer pressure distribution, so the dog gets it really quickly without a lot of pressure. So it's precision over power. And so my point is you guys have, that's an enforcer, right? Dogs don't speak English, so you need something, you need equipment, like with horses and literally all the other animals in the world, is you need some sort of tool to help you communicate. Obviously, with whales, you can't put a collar on them and make them do stuff. But with dogs, the point is you guys have to. So here's what you're missing on that end, potentially, is if the dog doesn't have a good heel or understand fundamentally what the heel is. Basically, when you start correcting the dog, is they're confused because they don't really understand what's happening. So your prong collar is your enforcement to a pre-existing and pre-known behavior. So if you asked a dog, let's say you got you just adopted a 7-month-old German Shepherd out of the shelter with zero training, found on the streets, and you said, "Zuri, sit," and they literally, you're speaking Swahili to them, and you slam them with anything, literally anything. They're going to be frustrated. They're going to not listen. It could make your relationship worse because of this. So it's really important as you are going through the process of training with your dog that you're enforcing the prong collar. You're enforcing behaviors, right? So my point is you don't want to just correct her for pulling because she's going to be like, "Ooh, okay, big whoop. This is uncomfortable, but I don't know what's happening." So when you say, when you teach her heel, so the heel command is to walk at your heels. And I'm assuming because you've been training for a while now that has to be in your toolbox. But again, what you're missing is the enforcement. So once your dog pulled, you start over, which is ludicrous to me that somebody out there, a human with a brain, would actually say to just start over and walk away, or just walk your dog at night so they don't pull, which is, I mean, in my opinion, scam artistry, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go to a dog trainer and they're just going to tell me, hey, my dog pulls it. It pulls all my dog pulls. We'll just walk at night so they don't get stimulated. Okay. So don't walk with your dog in the day and don't enjoy your beautiful shepherd. So teach your dog how to heal inside, and then so what you guys are having a hard time with, which is the first thing, which I talked about, is copying and pasting your environment. So work inside, work in your driveway, work in your basement, transfer to outside in the driveway, transfer to the yard, make sure you have a break. So those things are really, really important as you're developing. So you got to teach your dog how to heal first before you can correct them and enforce their pulling. Right. So when you say heel and the dog lunges, bang, they get corrected. Oh, yeah, I'm supposed to stay right here at your heels. So that's one of the reasons why you're probably still struggling is equipment aside, even if you're like, yep, we've been using balanced dog training now for a while, but you're not teaching the dog the behaviors you want. So think of behaviors as skills. Okay, behaviors are skills. Heel, place, down, sit, stay. Those are skills that you're teaching your dog, for an example. And you're going outside and testing these skills in the real game, like game time, right? So if your skills aren't good enough, you're going to fail. You're not going to do well, right? Like I practice jiu-jitsu, for an example. If I've never put on a gi and stepped on the mats and I just went in, I'm going to get crushed every time, right? The more skill you have, the more you can compete and the more you can be in there. So with your dog, you have to remember that anytime you're getting frustrated or anytime your dog is not listening, if you will, air quotes, you have to ask yourself, wait a minute, do they even know how to walk nice? Did I teach them heel? And in your case, if you did, two things. Now you're going to start enforcing the heel, and you're going to make sure that you're practicing in a, you know, practice environment before you're going outside for that walk. Because if you're going, I'm going to teach my dog how to heel outside, that's like really unrealistic mm-hmm. from a professional standpoint. We teach dogs
right
in a room with nothing, kind of in a clinical environment. Then we go to a little bit more distraction, a little bit more, and we just test them. And the moment that they're crushing it, we just keep moving on. And that's how dogs get super obedient. That's how you see, like, my shepherd down, toys, food, ball. I'll tell her to come back to me, then I'll send her away. And that's not, that didn't happen overnight. It's incremental, you know? So I think those are the two biggest things for you guys is teaching your dog at a very fundamental level what's expected and then slowly incrementing reality. But also in conjunction with making sure you're holding your dog accountable. And that's the two things that you're lacking right now is chaos when you're out in reality because you're not prepared for that. And your dog has never been told no with enforcement, right? Like they've been told no, but they're, what are you going to do about it? Oh, I'm going to walk away. Zuri, I'm going to walk away. You better not. Oh, walk away, right? So... And you guys will see such a dramatic change, and I'm excited for you guys because you seem like lovely people with a lovely dog, and you're just scratching your head and frustrated, and you'll see such fast results with this change of plan. So I'm going to definitely send you, it sounds like you have good equipment, but I'm going to send you some safety protocols to the prong collar, the introduction of the prong collar. The other thing that I would recommend too, if you want extra curriculum, I have a couple courses that would be really applicable to what you're working on, which is going to be the Kickstarter course. And again, you guys know more about you and your dogs than I do. So, but I have a Kickstarter course, which is essentially if you're struggling with your dog and you feel frustrated and you just want a clear way to like where to start, that's what that course is. And originally it was a puppy course, but as I started literally talking to camera, I'm like, you know what? This is everything that my clients with older dogs are missing. actually. So we're going to call it the Kickstarter course instead of the puppy course. And then I have a reactive to neutral course, which goes over, it's like, you know, it took us 2 days to, it's big. It's like, I mean, you do it at home at your own time. You can get it done in a day, but, you know, some people hash it out. But that's also a course fundamentally on the equipment you're using for reactivity in general. And so that's another option too, if you're looking for extra curriculum. It's $100 off right now too. So it's like more than 50% off the courses. I can give you a code. It's just, you just use the code YouTube if you're interested. And that will give you $100 off each course. So what questions do you have outside of that?
I think a lot of our question was about enforcement and accountability, basically, because we don't know anything about it, really. Mm-hmm. And that was basically it. You know, how, what is too much accountability? What is too much enforcement? Mm. You know, what can hurt our relationship if we went overboard with it? Mm. You know, so just
absolutely
know the right balance of, you know, if she's not listening and we're enforcing, what is missing in that situation? You know, what's going on? You know, and what do you do next? So we don't want to, I guess we don't want to over enforce. We don't want to be Hitler or whatever have you, mm-hmm. you know, all at the same time, but mm-hmm. And not damage our relationship with her, because she is, in our mind, a baby. She's 7 months old, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, we don't want to hurt her. I don't want to hurt her psyche or anything like that. So, I mean, we're not weird helicopter parent type people, but all at the same time, we want to make sure whatever we're doing is well balanced.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are all great concerns and stuff to be mindful of. And I think a couple answers there. You know, obviously, every dog is different, obviously, it, just like with humans. Like, humans can, like, you know, you get somebody that went through the military, you know, maybe they're not going to be gun shy at somebody yelling at them or something. I don't know. My point is, like I have a South African Mastiff. He's a Boer bull, and the pressure I have to give him sometimes, just physically, to like, for an example, like if he's wants to run inside or something, and he's so strong that I have to use a lot of power for me to just hold him there. For an example, like as he's developed, because he looks like he looks like an adult dog, but he's not, right? So he's 100 plus pounds of all muscle, but he's only 9 months old. So my point is, you know, same thing with like corrections. Like some dogs are very sensitive, some dogs are not. And so it's the same thing with parenting, right? You know, it's the same thing with everything, like being, you know, an employee or an employer. You just have to that was too much. I'm going to step back a little bit. And that's just that's part of dog ownership. That's part of, I learned from that, and I'm going to, you know, like the other night, for example, I FaceTimed my son before bed because I was out of town and he started crying. I'm like, I will never do that again. That hurt my feelings more than it hurt his feelings, right? So you have to learn, you know, what is acceptable and what isn't. But I can tell you right now, the worst thing to do is to do the same thing over and over again, expect different results, which is what you guys have been doing.
Right.
So I think the enforcement is something that you guys as dog owners will put a toe in and just start to feel out like what's appropriate, what's not. But I think at the end of the day, for me, once you start using corrections and enforcement, sometimes when I say these things, people automatically, their brain goes to tools, prong collars and e-collars and whatever. But that's not, it's just your voice. Like these tools are enforcing your voice, right? So like a house isn't going to get built with all the tools sitting on the ground. You have to do it, right? So with dog ownership, it's very similar that like my dog now that she's an adult, and she's a Dutch Shepherd, so she's like the dog to train, like the best dog to train, in my opinion. I tell her to do something, she does it. I tell her to do it in 3 different languages, she does it. I can have an elephant walk in the room and she'll do it, right? But I don't have to use any tools. I don't have to use any equipment. I don't have to have a leash on my dog. I just tell her to do it and she does it because of the the steps that I've taken in the beginning of our life. Again, Burley, my South African Mastiff, that looks like a bodybuilder but is actually a puppy in his head, is not like that right now, you know? So I think for you guys, just remember as you're going through this, the objective is to say something to your dog. Like you go to Home Depot, you get out of the car, is there a heel? Walk in. Oh, you're looking at it, something on the shelf, is there a down? Stay. Oh yeah, let's take a, that's how it should be, okay?
Right.
Because you've put into place, she knows, heel is heel, I don't wanna get in trouble, and maybe I'll get paid after this. Down is down. You've practiced it over and over and over and over again. And she knows that she has. So it's not necessarily keeping dogs under our thumb and forcing them to do everything we want. But if we want a dog to fit into our lives like they should, right? Where they're not just feral dogs that just let them out back and say, be free, do what you want. Like, no. there are domesticated friends that we want to live with. But if we're going to live with them, they have to learn how to live with us. And so think about that as you're moving forward, that the equipment is just a piece of you in the beginning. It's just your training wheels in the beginning, right? But if you're using training wheels after 2 years of training, using is a difference than having, right? If my dog is off leash, she has an e-collar on, I'm not using it. But if I needed to, I have that. It's the same thing with like putting a seatbelt on. I'm not putting the seat. It's not like I put a seatbelt on me because I'm a bad driver. I'm putting my seatbelt on because I'm worried about everybody else, right? So it's important for you guys as you're developing these, don't worry so much about the equipment and what it means and what it doesn't mean. It's just important for you to understand your dog fundamentally understands the behavior you're asking, and you're giving them a fair correction if they don't listen. And that correction will be sustainable, right? So when you say heel, the dog's like, I'm going to stay here. I don't want to get in trouble. I'm going to stay right here till I hear that word break and I'm out. Same thing with down, same thing with sit. The dog knows. Right now you say something to your dog and it's wicked optional. It is like, maybe I'll do this. It's like, if you were to bet your life on your dog's obedience, you probably wouldn't, right? It's like,
no.
Right? I would for my dog. Like if I brought Lakota out and somebody said, I'm going to throw 100 balls past your dog and squeak them all at the same time and your life depends on it, would you do it? 100%. Because I know I've put her through. I know she's been through it. She listens. She respects me. She understands that. Here's the important part. She also understands that when I say break, she can go and have the thing, right? So you walk into Home Depot, you walk into your mom's house, and you just say, "Hey, I got stuff in my hands. Down, stay." And your dog's sitting there. And the goal and the objective isn't to put them into misery of like you can't see anybody, you can't be happy to see anybody. It's just, hold my hand when we're crossing the parking lot. When we get into Disneyland, you can hug Mickey, right? When you get into your mom's house, you say down, stay. Hey, mom, how are you? Good. Okay. Zuri, break. Then she can say hi. So that's the important thing to understand too when you're going through this process. It's not to suppress your dog to a point where they don't want to see Home Depot people or your mom or other dogs. It's just to say, when I ask you to do something, I need you to do it, A, because I don't want a stressful relationship with my life and make it a chore to bring you out, and B, it's for safety. So if you're off leash and I say, Zuri, come, and right now with your obedience, it's extremely optional, that's a huge liability. And your dog, God forbid something happened to your dog, you can go back to your dog trainer that said never correct your dog and say, hey, now what? Right? So I think that that's just an important piece of it. And again, guys, like I want you to understand too, I'm not out here trying to prove anything. I'm a dog lover first. I got into dog training because my personal dog almost killed me in a train going off leash. I learned about e-collars. I learned about training. And I've trial and errored so much things. And if there were other better, efficient, and effective ways out there to train a dog, I'd let you know. Anyway, so I'm going to send you that stuff by the end of the day, guys, and just get started on that. And I think you guys will be in a much better spot.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much. We definitely appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely. We're lost.
I understand.
And lost in our training and just we're doing everything, but it's getting worse.
Yeah.
You know, and it's frustrating for her and us and everybody. You know, yep. So
I understand. I see it all the time, unfortunately. But the good thing is the internet is out there, and you at some point stumbled across something that goes, whoa, this guy's doing the things that my trainer is saying not to do and getting better results. What's that about? And now here we are. And I'm here to say, oh, I've seen this 1,500 times this year already, right? So I can tell you that things are going to be okay. And I think you guys will thank yourselves for that in the future. So good luck. And I'll send you all that stuff by the end of the day.
Okay. All right, thank you so much guys, for your time.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye. Yep, bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.